Ladies and gentlemen, I love interviewing people like this. When you think local boy made good, that's all right. That's a story and a half. But local boy breaks the world in America. That's a bit different. Nigel Lithgow, hello.
Hi there. How are you, Pete?
I'm well. Sorry, Nigel Lithgow, OBE. How could I miss that bit out?
Not until tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm eating a Madge tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I'm just plain old Nige at the moment.
Nigel, can you believe, local boy from across the water, do you ever imagine that your career would go the way it went?
No, never, to be honest with you. I mean, I started off, as well you know, as a dancer when I was 11 years of age at the Hilda Hilton Bromley School of Dance in Wallasey. Just joining the young generation, I think, I thought I was a star then. That was it on BBC television, you know, back in the 60s. Just to see what happened towards the end of what I thought was the coming to the end of my career. Nasty Nigel popped up on Pop Stars, changed my life totally.
Let's go back to when you were a dancer. Has dancing changed? Because, of course, you use dancers with all the productions you do in America, which we'll talk about. But has dancing changed?
Miraculously. It's ridiculous now. I remember doing a Sunday night at the London Palladium as a Pamela Divas dancer and rushing into the wings to watch Rudolf Nureyev and Margot Fonteyn. And Nureyev would do four or five pirouettes, you know, his spins. And nowadays, they do 12, 13. It's so much more athletic. Whether it's, you know, eating better or just training better, I don't know. But the standard of dance is vastly improved.
Now, you mentioned Nasty Nigel and Pop Idol. Of course, you were the trailblazer without any shadow of a doubt.
Well, Pop Stars broke it. And in truth, I've got to give my son Simon Lithgow the credit. He was working on a show in Australia called Pop Stars, which actually came out of New Zealand. And he said, Dad, you're going to see this show. I think it's really interesting. And it was the first time ever, I think, I'd seen the audition process actually filmed. You know, you normally, when you see a talent show, they've already been through that process and they walk on the stage and they sing or do whatever they do. But this was actually showing the background to it all, kids standing up and being eyeballed. You know, I thought the Pop Stars was even stronger than Pop Idol in the audition process because we had five of them standing there in a straight line and then we'd walk down the line and literally eyeball them. It must have been really nerve-wracking for these kids. And, of course, I was using all sort of Morecambe and Wise's lines like, oh, you sang all the right notes, but I think you probably put them in the wrong order. and old music hall stuff. And they say, oh, Nasty Nigel. Nasty. Oh, what a horrible man. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And that sort of broke the ice for that type of show. And then, of course, Simon Fuller created Pop Idol, and I joined his company to exec produce it.
Interesting, because I can relate to every one of them, Nigel, because I was on New Faces years ago.
That's right, I remember.
So and Mickey and Mickey Mouse, Ted Ray, yeah.
Catch. Yeah. Ted Ray, and then Nina Mishkoff.
Yeah.
Took it over, didn't she?
Who was the female Nasty Nigel?
No, but she was nasty. She wasn't using funny lines, she was nasty.
Yeah, she was wicked. Now, how did you break America? This is the big thing, because people here don't realise that you're huge in America.
Well, it's the weight I've put on, Pete.
you look...
Really, it was American Idol. You know, Pop Idol was... We took it... I left after 1 year on Pop Idol. That first year when Will Young won, I then went to America with it to create it there and make it there. And it became an absolute phenomenon over there. We found a young lady that, thank goodness, we made a sort of star straight away with Kelly Clarkson. And she really did become a big star over there. And that sort of led the Americans into booking it season after season. At the end of the day, we were making like 52 hours of programming for American Idol. So it just became this enormous show. Then whatever you put against it, they call this program in America the Death Star, because they couldn't schedule other programs against it, the other channels, because it just wiped everything off the board, you know?
Is the pressure worse in America for you to put shows on? Because they don't tolerate defeat, do they, there?
No, they don't. I mean, it's getting tough all over the world, let's be honest about it. It's tough in England and the UK now. But there, you know, I've just seen a couple of shows, and they paid something like $50 million for this one series, and it was off the air within three shows, and that was it, gone. Another one that they've just done called Knock Knock, which is a bit like our Surprise Surprise, two episodes of that off the air. Yeah. So it is tough. At the same time, you know, Simon Fuller came up to me about 2007 and said, "Oh, we're doing really well with the singing show." He said, "But your background is dance. Why don't we try and, you know, do a talent show for dance?" I, of course, in my wisdom, turned around and said, "Oh, that won't work." He said, "Why not?" I said, "Well, no one likes dance here. There's not a program on," which I wasn't. You know, Strictly Come Dancing, or Dancing with the Stars, as it's called in America, was not on at that time. And so I created a program called So You Think You Can Dance, and that's been running now for 12 seasons. So if you just get it right, they really stick behind it. But if you get it wrong, it's off the air. No one will pick the phone up to you. It's one of those things, you know, you're richly rewarded when you're successful and you're ignored when you're not.
I'm talking to Nigel Lithgow. I've got to ask, were you accepted as a British man over there, or were the Americans against you coming in?
Originally, I don't think they wanted any Brits in there, you know, but it was at that time where Mark Burnett, who was an ex-Brit, had just done Survivor. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was hugely successful out there, even though they didn't really want Brits to do it. And then I went out there with Idol. It was one of those areas where the Americans didn't really understand it. They didn't know what this sort of factual entertainment or reality, as they called it. They wanted everything scripted. And even when we did the very first American Idol, there was a script which said Ryan Seacrest, who was the host, walks down the line, picks out blonde, brings blonde into, and you go, "What are you doing?
What?
Well, what's this?" And they say, "Oh, well, so that we know what we're doing." So you don't have to know. Turn the camera on, let things happen, and then it's an empty photograph on a jigsaw puzzle. And you'll have to work the jigsaw puzzle out in the edit suite and then figure out what it's about. But you do not write it. Let it happen. And that's when you get the best moments. So they were quite shocked. And that's why, really, so many Brits after that were invited out, because we were making those types of programs. We were making the Surprise Surprises, the Beatles about. And you know, we believed in the fact of, let things happen in front of the camera. Don't try and direct it.
Do you see a day when reality shows will fail?
Starting now. Yes, absolutely. Everything's cyclical, Pete. You know that. You know, some years it's sitcoms that are really good. Other years it's scripted dramas that are great. All of a sudden, fabulous programs like Sherlock come on. And like everything, you know, we're human and we get bored with things. So things have just started to die off now. Idol's come to its final season in America. And So You Think You Can Dance's ratings were a little bit down this year. We need new things all the time to excite us, and especially nowadays where so many people are watching television when they want to watch it. There's such a proliferation of screens around the homes now. Families don't always get together to watch programs. So it's, you know, event programs are always going to be successful. But after that, we're going to schedule our own programs. We're going to binge watch when we want to, when great programs like House of Cards comes on or Homeland. what was that great drama that's just been on in the UK? I'm sorry, I'm sort of behind with my UK programs now. But
Downton Abbey?
I know that a lot of my friends... Downton Abbey, of course. Yeah. No, it was one where he played the detective in that small village and...
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
The murderer
yeah,
was.
Yeah, sorry, my brain's gone as well. It's an age thing with me.
Yeah, yeah, don't worry. Yeah.
You know, Nigel, going back to Britain, the old days when you first started, the television audiences were huge, weren't they? You were talking 29 million for a Coronation Street episode and things like that.
Yeah.
It's changed
yeah.
so much, yeah. hasn't it?
Well, you know, there are lots of other things to take our interest now. And certainly with, you know, kids, video games and everything else. You know, most kids in America now don't even watch programs on you know, what we class as televisions. They watch it on their computers, on their watches, their telephones. It's just a mobile world now. So it's very exciting at the same time, because if you're involved in producing content, for, you know, and programs, the world's our oyster now. We've got so many places to you know, expose our art, if you will.
Is it easy for people, young people now? I mean, you're on the programme now and people listen all the time for advice when we have people like you on. Is it easy or very hard for people to get into the industry?
Oh, this is a difficult question. I'll tell you why. And I'll go back a few years now. When I used to ask kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? I remember kids saying to me, I want to be a train driver. Then the sort of few years later, I want to be an airline pilot. Then I want to be an astronaut. You ask kids now, what do you want to be when you grow up? They say, I want to be famous. And it's just, what do you mean? Well, what do you want to be famous in? Oh, I don't know. I just want to be famous. The focus has gone a little bit on what kids want to do and what they want to be. This thing called celebrity that's there now is very dangerous, because in truth, anybody now can be famous. You can, you know, take a video of yourself that becomes viral. It's all over the world within seconds now, like that Susan Boyle video. Be famous all over the world. But for how long, Pete? That's the problem nowadays. How do you sustain it? So you just need to work really hard, get a really good background, which is difficult to get now. You know, in the old days, and you well remember all of the clubs that we had,
yeah.
where you actually did, you know, your tenancy in these clubs, and it was like an apprenticeship, if you will. That's all gone now. So you've still got to put that work in somehow.
I was going to say, it's interesting you say that, because I've just written about that in the Liverpool Echo, saying exactly that, that, you know, if somebody pays good money, they want to see 2 hours on stage and stagecraft.
Absolutely. I don't know if you can put summer seasons together anymore.
No,
in the UK?
No, not
I know
at
we
all.
Do very well with Panthers,
yeah.
But, you know, they're bringing in sort of stars over from America now that are sort of past their prime in America, paying them an absolute fortune to wander about the stage, sing badly, and make you think, oh, my God, I remember when he ran around the beach, and now look at it.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you know why they're doing that? I asked one of the promoters of Panther, one of the big ones in the country recently, and they said because there's no English stars coming through.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but the reason there's no English stars coming through is because no one's backing English stars.
Hmm.
You know, it requires the clubs to be there. It's that old thing of supply and demand. You know, if the demand isn't there,
yeah.
there's nobody there to do it. And as well, you know, comedy changed so much in the 90s, really. It all became very, you know, this sort of subculture of comedy. And if you actually stood up like the comedians used to do and told a joke, you would go, oh, dear, that's terrible. Oh, how can you tell a joke? No, it's all got to be this, you know, alternative comedy. And it was alternative. It was so alternative that it made me laugh.
Did I hear you put Panto on in America?
My son, Christopher Lithgow, and his beautiful wife, Becky, they actually put, I've got two Pantos this year. One in Pasadena, on the Pasadena Playhouse there, and they're doing Peter Pan there this year, and then they're doing Aladdin in Orange County.
Wow.
And Cinderella in Laguna. Wow. Yeah, so it's three in actual fact.
What strange places to put them on?
I know, it's really strange. Well, the best place they did was they went to Salt Lake City, and of course, that's the Mormon town, and there are no Brits there. But what they've learned, of course, is that if you do it where Brits are, Brits know the sort of rigmarole of behind you and boo and hiss, and bring their American friends, and everyone enjoys it.
Yeah.
But when they first started, when you know, they had a plant in the audience shout, "Behind you!" And everybody in the audience turn around and look behind them. It was nothing to do with what was on stage. So now it goes up. Can you imagine? So now Becky goes out there and in the first stages of the panel says, "Welcome everybody," and explains that they must boo and they must hiss.
Yeah.
And then she does the, "I'll pretend I'm the bad witch. Boo me, boo. Now I'm the good witch. Hooray." So they get used to it,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And now they keep returning year on year. So it's a nice slow build-up and getting more and more fantasy.
So a boy from the Wirral, where do you live now? Where's your base?
I'm based now in Los Angeles in a place called Bel Air. And, you know, I was going to say the weather's beautiful. We've just had floods there. But now I'm sitting on the M25 as we're going around to pick up my grandson in the pouring rain. So welcome back, Nigel, to the UK.
Nigel, where's your career going now? You're incredibly successful.
Downhill,
you don't have to work.
Downhill.
No, I'm not having that. Not having that. Not now you're getting an OBE.
I go back, and I've just created this little quiz show called Doubt with a friend of mine, Eric Levy, and we make statements, and it's all pop sort of statements, things like, "Betty White is older than sliced bread." "George Clooney sleeps in the closet." And you've got to decide if that's true or false. It's that simple, true or false, you know? And it's a fun program, so we're making 20 episodes of that. And I'm doing a choreographer's challenge show for a new platform on Verizon called Go 90. So just trying to stay there, clinging on with my fingertips, trying to be aware of everything new that's coming out in the technological world.
If somebody listening is sitting on an idea, what advice would you give them?
Well, it depends how hard the idea is. It will hurt your piles if it's very hard. Don't sit on it for too long.
Right.
My doctor always said that to me. Don't sit on it. It's a tough one. I would suggest, depends what the idea is, number one. You can always send it to producers, but make sure you mail yourself the same idea and don't open it, just so you've got a date stamp on it. Or, you know, take it to an attorney. Or you know, I don't know the unions now. There's a writer's guild, I think. Always send it through that. Never really just throw your ideas away by sending it in to somebody and never receiving a reply. You never know when that idea might turn up written by somebody else. So
Absolutely. You
need to be careful. But the biggest advice I can give you is, believe in it. Don't just go, "Oh, this isn't good enough." Believe in it and send it somewhere. Don't just sit on it. That's stupidity. It's if you've got a good idea, if you believe in it, then go wholeheartedly behind it.
Do you love looking at the videos of you when you were a dancer?
No. I have now got a titanium plate in the back of my neck where all my sort of discs are disintegrating. I've got two cadaver bones using my C6 and C7, I think, or something like that. And now there's five gone, and there's a drill through this because it's calcified and blah, blah, blah. And then I look at those videos with my head being thrown all over the place in the 60s and realize why I'm in this state. No, listen, I wasn't really very good, Pete, to be frank with you. It was just fun at the time. And I became a choreographer when I was 21, which was far too early. I hadn't had the experiences I should have had. So everything was a strain and stress. And in those days, we were turning out 7 and 8 production numbers a week for those sort of Rolf Harris shows, the Vera Lynn shows, the Lulu shows, Scylla shows. It was enormous, the amount of work that we got through. But, you know...
Will you ever retire?
When I got to America, of course.
Yeah.
I don't want to retire. I mean, I'll slow down. I've had 2 heart attacks now since I've been in America, so I need to slow down. I've got a pacemaker and a defibrillator, which just keeps me ticking along. And other than that, I feel really healthy. I'm 66 now, and I'm still raring to go. But I'm starting to enjoy golf a little more. I'm starting to enjoy, you know, being with my family and now my grandchildren. And I don't want to be stupid about it.
Nigel, I've wanted to do this interview for so long, and I'm so, so thrilled that I've finally pinned you down. Do you get to England much?
I don't. I've really been tied up with doing American Idol for 9 months of the year, so you think you can dance for 3 months of the year. You know, I came back and I saw you, obviously, at Arcilla's funeral. And I got a chance to go and see my old dancing teachers in Wallasey, which gave me a great deal of happiness. Hilda's 90 now, and being looked after in a little home. It was just wonderful to see her. And now to come back for this award, I'm going to go and see my sister when I get my little medal. So there's lots of beautiful things and great memories here. But nothing that really calls me back anymore, I must be honest.
Nigel Lithgow, OBE, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you. And, you know, good luck to Liverpool Football Club again. I mean, I don't know what's going wrong at the moment, but we've got to get it together.
Perhaps they need a new director.
Oh, I'm not going there yet.
All right. Leave it there.